afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, and distinguished lecturer emeritus at York College, City University of New York. I welcome you to this April 27th coronavirus pandemic version of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's right. Online, the YC York College community is tuning in. Well, today we're going to examine the Chinese insults to African diplomats, an issue that was raised on the soapbox last week. Dr. Ivor Carruthers will be joining us shortly for that discussion. And then we're going to be talking about the intergenerational damage to black DNA, which is a precondition to the whole issue of the coronavirus pandemic, the preconditions that we are suffering from, that is to say black people in particular. Cam Howard will be here to discuss that. But before we do that, once again, joining with our studio announcer on the soapbox, it's a good soapbox to be on, to again remind us to be safe, to practice social distancing, even though things are moving in the right direction. I think the governor's absolutely right to be cautious, to be safe, to err on the side of caution as opposed to risking it, as we see in Georgia and some other states that are willing to risk it rather than wait it out to make sure that everything is going to be solid. Wash your hands. I must say, and I'll comment on this later, I am really getting a greater appreciation for what washing your hands means. Because when you listen very carefully to what the doctors are saying, you know, this coronavirus is pretty wimpy. You know, if it hits your hands and a little soap and water, this really does take care of it. It's not like what the orange man was talking about. We'll talk about that later. And be kind to each other. Be kind to each other. Take care of each other. Yes, do that. Let's be kind to each other. Let's be patient with each other. Let's share with each other. Let's take care of our neighbors, our families. Let's do all of those things as we move forward. I also want to just remind you to go to the website, ibw21.org, ibw21.org. We have an enormous amount of resources on the coronavirus pandemic on our website, all kind of medical information and medical information and data, fact sheets, all kinds of information that's useful, but also a lot of studies, particularly those studies that are dealing with the whole question of the disproportionate impact of this virus on black and brown communities in particular. So please do that. And, of course, at the end of the show, I'll be on the soapbox at the end of the hour, so we'll have an opportunity to chat a bit at the end of the hour about issues that I think are important, and they will all essentially be related to this issue of the coronavirus pandemic. Now, I'd like to welcome to our microphone someone who's no stranger to our audience, having been on the show before. And, of course, we talk about the tremendous reparations summit we had a couple of years ago. She was one of the key voices as a part of that as well. She's also a member of the National African American Reparations Commission, but comes to us today as the General Secretary of the Samuel DeWitt Proctor Conference. That is none other than Dr. Ivor Carruthers. Dr. Carruthers, welcome again to Vantage Point.
Thank you so much, Ron. It's always a pleasure, as you know. We're locked at the hip.
That's right. I mean, you know, we're deep off into this work. First of all, just quickly, I have to ask all my guests a little bit about this. Your just perspective in sharing with the audience. One of the things we've been trying to do, and you've been a part of it, is making sure that our people understand that this is a serious virus and we need to, in fact, be careful and cautious and do the right thing. I mean, even as we build towards the future, your thoughts about that?
Well, for sure. I think that we look for the silver lining in the worst of despair. And I think this offers us an opportunity to reimagine a world as we know it should be and we want it to be. And I think we have to take advantage of this opportunity to do just that, to figure out how, as you have just said, come together and take care of one another. And that's what we are trying to do in our little part of the world by making sure that as an organization we have pivoted to take a virtual environment and create opportunity for us to create and recreate family by giving the kind of information that you're giving and creating a network of how we communicate the information that we need to have to build a different kind of world.
Wonderful. Now, one of the reasons I wanted you to come on, the most important for today, Samuel D. Witt Proctor Conference is doing many things. It came to my attention maybe a week and a half ago, and then it was raised again on the soapbox portion of our show last week, people being infuriated by episodes or episodes in China where a letter went out, really, from African diplomats saying they were being treated in a very, very derogatory way in China. Would you just sort of share with our audience give the background on what the incidents were and the action that Samuel D. Witt Proctor Conference is taking?
Sure. So the first thing, historically, we should understand that people of African descent have been in China for thousands of years or have had relationships with China. And certainly in this, quote, post-colonial world, Africans from the continent as well as the diaspora are increasingly living there generationally. And so I would assume that in large part because of the ways in which the United States policy headed by 45 has attempted to scapegoat the Chinese in relationship to this Corona 19, one of the responses has been for Africans who are living in China, some for multiple generations, finding themselves now becoming the scapegoats for the Chinese. And so they are being singled out, identified, they're being expelled, and or they're being quarantined. And this was at such an extent that it got the attention of many Africans outside of Africa. And the Samuel D. Witt Proctor Conference was an organization that stepped up to work with some others from a pan-African perspective to express our outrage and to ask the African Union to intercede.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, because I thought it was a letter from African diplomats who had come together, and perhaps I was mistaken in that regard. But
no, you are absolutely correct. At the time that Proctor got involved, there was only one African head of state who had actually created a formal complaint, and that was the president of Ghana. But right. Since then, in the last 2 weeks, the African Union has indeed spoken out, and many of the individual states have also spoken out against this. The challenge, of course, is that Africa is compromised and juxtaposed by the fact that China has in some ways become the new kind of colonial power in
That's
Africa.
Right. Absolutely.
And so right now, Africa's total debt to China is, you know, about $120 billion, 20% of its total debt. And it's hard for you not to pay the piper when you're in that situation. We know when we travel, and we have done so, Ron, that you can see the ways in which China has come into Africa, is doing a lot of the infrastructure development. They are buying a lot of the land. I understand close to 50% of the investment in China from China to and in Africa is around real estate. A lot of it is in transportation, and then, of course, the textiles and the minerals. And so when you owe someone that kind of money, it's hard to sometimes be in a position to criticize them. But we have to stand up in this moment and do just that.
Right. You anticipated my question because, you know, this is one of the great sort of anomalies that we all are dealing with today is, you know, China pursuing its own interests. And some of the projects are good projects, but there's also a way in which the Chinese extract certain concessions. For example, almost always the workers, they bring the workers from China very often and don't use local labor. There are a number of issues that that need to be raised. And again, you know, this dependency is one of the reasons why I suspected that these nations were being mute. Now, there's a petition that has been gathered. Is that petition still active and alive? And
if yes,
so, how,
it is.
How do people sign on?
Avaaz.org, A-V-A-A-Z.org. When it pops up, it is in three languages. We tried to get it in four, but the petition the petition site will only take three, so it's in Portuguese, French, and English. So it is really a representative of a Pan-African collaboration in which some of us from around the African world came together to draft it and to post it. So it's Avaaz, A-V-A-A-Z.org. If you just put in China, COVID-19, or African Union, it will pop up. And at the beginning of the month, the working group of experts of people of African descent also issued a statement that I think we should all be aware of, talking about the ways specifically in which COVID-19 is taking its toll on people of African descent.
Now, I want to get that right. A-V-A-A-Z?
A-V as in Barry or Victor.
Right.
A-A-Z.org.
.org. Okay, because I want to repeat that several times during the course of the program. We just have about a minute left, and I can't leave without asking you quickly to also, because you are a member of the National African American Reparations Commission, has traveled globally and have really been in interacting with faith denominations, congregations around the world, and there appears to be some progress in terms of these denominations coming to a epiphany, if that's the case, about reparations and being supportive.
Oh, absolutely. I think that there's no doubt that there is a moral imperative, there's an ethical imperative, and there's an institutional imperative for the church, the Black church, and all communities of faith to get involved in the reparations movement. And that's exactly what I mean about taking advantage of this opportunity in this moment, despite the ways in which we are still suffering. But we all know that we have been in a pandemic since the boats left the ocean in our homeland.
That's
and right. So that part is not new. What I am reminded of, and the person speaking to me through this, one of my mentors is John Henry Clark, who called us into a reality that we would have to embrace Pan-Africanism or perish, were at a crossroads. And so I think that this China conversation, as well as our reality in the United States, argues well for us to understand, embrace, and begin to create models of community building that are based around our own interests, not other people's interests, and commodification of us, and based upon our capacity to work together as family.
All right, Dr.
So that's what Proctor is doing. We invite you to our national everyday prayer, daily prayer. Get your 30 minutes of prayer in to fortify you spiritually. And we hope to see you and hear you come on Proctor Live, Facebook Live. You can catch us on YouTube, and you can catch us at our website, sdpconference.info.
All right. Dr. Ivor Carruthers, thank you so much for joining us on Vantage Point today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Always great information, and that issue was raised. And I indicated to the caller last week that I had mentioned it. The caller called somewhat agitated because I didn't spend, you know, a whole period of time on it, because that's, the soapbox is like 30 minutes or so, 30 seconds to a minute, and we don't have time to really spend a lot of time on it. But very much aware of it, and therefore wanted you to be a part of it. Again, the website to go to is avaaz.org. That's avaaz.org, and you'll find that petition dealing with the mistreatment of people of African descent, Africans in China, and now, again, many heads of state, initially Ghana, but now the African Union and others joining in this outcry and protest over the way in which our people are being treated in China. We're now joined by another member, actually, of the National African American Reparations Commission. He is the Mayo co-chair of VNCOBRA, the National Coalition for Reparations for Blacks in America. Both of our guests today out of Chicago, it is none other than Cam Howard. Cam, welcome to Vantage Point.
Thank you, Dr. Daniels, for having me, and good afternoon, Dr. Carruthers.
Well, she's moved on. I couldn't take it would be too much for our audience to take both of y'all at the same time. So I had to separate y'all. too much power, brother.
Well, thank you for having us both, but greatly appreciate it.
Well, what I wanted to explore with you, you did an article in the Chicago Crusader that is very, very pertinent to this issue of the Corona COVID-19 pandemic and all of the discussion about disparities and whatnot. And you wanted to talk about the damage to the DNA of black people, of Africans, that needs to be understood in relationship to this crisis on an intergenerational basis. So why don't you just share with us the basic elements of the article that you put together for the Chicago Crusader?
Sure. Thank you, Dr. Daniels. So what we entitled the article was Transgenerational Epigenetics is the Cause of the Higher Rates of Death Among Blacks. And I know that's a lot. So what we are looking at is, you know, a lot of people around the country have been rightly talking about how pre-existing illnesses were the cause of the higher rates of death, coupled with the toxic environment that we live in, you know, the economic status, the social status, cultural status of our communities, and that collectively these are what was causing blacks to die at a higher rate. But those of us who have been in the reparations struggle for quite a long while have seen something totally different. We agree that the pre-existing illnesses that COVID-19 are attacking and are addressing or are attacking those with these pre-existing illnesses. But we look beyond the current social milieu and look toward what this new science of transgeneration epigenetics says. And what it says is that as a result of cataclysmic environmental conditions like the Jewish Holocaust, that those events cause a change in the DNA and the epigene of the DNA. And that change in the gene is then passed down generationally, and then under certain environmental conditions, certain social conditions, then it could be triggered that will result in these higher rates of illnesses. And so I can stop there. You have another question?
No. Continue on because...
So what they were looking at in the Jewish community was, you know, why did the grandchildren of Holocaust survivors have a higher rate of heart attacks, diabetes, strokes, cancers than their peers whose grandchildren did not go through the Holocaust? And that's where they were able to determine through genetic study that this epigene had been altered. Now, the Jewish Holocaust was 6 years. The African Holocaust, or the Moth or the Manganese, as Dr. Karinga calls it, has been an ongoing 500-year Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And so we know, and even if we just look at the period of enslavement of 246 years, we know that that in itself had more trauma spread across our community than probably was spread across the Jewish community. And so we know for a fact that our genetic material has also been altered. And it is that alteration that, again, clicks on with the stresses that we have to deal with on an everyday basis in this country, and it results in diabetes, heart attacks, strokes, et cetera. And then the COVID virus comes in and attacks those weakened immune systems, and it's an overload. And so mostly the people who have these pre-existing illnesses in our community succumb to it in the form of death. So we just wanted our people to really understand that and to know that, you know, this is a reparations argument. This is a reparations issue. The fact that more of us are dying from COVID-19 than any other community is because of the existing state of our DNA that was damaged during all these atrocities that were committed against our people. And thus, this is a reparations issue. We would like to sum it up, Dr. D, in one sentence, that we do not wear the scars of enslavement on our backs like our ancestors. We wear the scars of enslavement on our DNA, and that's proven, that's scientifically proven today.
Yeah, so in a way, another way of saying it is we have a predisposition to be affected by viruses, various other things that occur, and in fact, because of our weakened immune systems, we will already have, you know, these high rates of these various diseases that are cited. And that's very interesting. And you've heard Professor Sir Hilary Beckles speak on numerous occasions. And he has made the case that the colonial powers, and one of the things that is to be repaired, as he talks about, quote unquote, cleaning up the mess. And he cites the health effects. He talks about diabetes and hypertension. He talks about all of those things that people in the Caribbean disproportionately suffer from. So it seems to me that you're on target in terms of making this case and sharing this information, you know, with our listening audience. Now, I also know in this article you were making some specific requests or demands, I think, to the around the Illinois or around the effort around getting an Illinois Reparations Commission passed. I don't have the article in front of me, but I know you went beyond that to say that there were certain specific actions that Encober wanted to see enacted in Illinois, and by extension that applies to what we might do nationally.
Sure, because we were writing this in a local paper, we wanted to deal with the local conditions that we were engaged in here in Chicago. And that was a move to get a Chicago Reparations Commission passed. And we have a resolution in the Health and Human Relations Committee in the City Council. And there's also a bill in the Illinois General Assembly also calling for an Illinois Reparations Commission. So we were trying to make the argument that since this has a enslavement origin, this meaning the higher rates of death of blacks in Chicago and Illinois, since it had an enslavement origin, this was an opportune time to pass the slavery commission bills. And what we had identified in these bills long before COVID, because we first submitted the Chicago bill in September, was that there would be a research center formed at our county hospital specifically to study the transgeneration epigenetic injury that we suffer from, and to come up with some protocols from which science says, this new science says, you may be able to minimize it, neutralize it, or even reverse it. But the science is new, and we need, we need a national research center, concerning what we were trying to do in Chicago, because we had these bills in before these bodies, that we would get a local research center to at least compile the current science that's out there, if they're not doing any original research, because there's a lot of stuff out there we just haven't compiled it to the point, and it hasn't been directed toward us, it's been directed toward other people. So we need specific research, science, protocols, recommendations for people of African descent in this country.
Great. As I referenced earlier, Encobra is a charter member, a founding member of the National African American Reparations Commission, and has always played a leading role in the evolution and development of H.R. 40, the bill, which is now a bill to study, not just a study, it's a remedy bill studying reparations proposals for African Americans. Would you give us a sort of an update? What is the status of H.R. 40 now? I know our audience is interested in that, and we and NARC and, of course, the Encobra Legislative Committee is on point in this regard. And I'm sure they'd like to know, just are we making any progress? How's it going?
So prior to COVID, Dr. Daniels, as you know, we were making tremendous progress. We were about to schedule Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee was about to schedule a series of field hearings, like the hearing that was held on H.R. 40 in the Judiciary Committee last June. But she was going to take this around the country, and she was preparing to have a vote in the Judiciary Committee. We have the number of Democratic representatives to pass the bill out of the Judiciary Committee and then to present it on the House floor. We have 125 co-sponsors. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee said that she believed if we had 150 co-sponsors going into the House for a vote, that we can get it passed. And so that's what we were doing. NARC and COBRA, other organizations, We're trying to push to get those other 25 co-sponsors in order to get it pushed, get it to the floor for a House vote. So we are very enthused about that. Right before COVID, the COVID crisis has put all congresspersons in a state of urgency to deal with this crisis. And so it's kind of put a halt, a slow halt into the movement. But and COBRA has created a interactive map. You can go on our website, incobraonline.org. You can click on the map. You can click on the state that you live in. You can scroll down over a box that represents your congressperson, and you have right there, it'll click, go directly to their website, and then you can find their phone number and call them and ask them to sign on to H.R. 40. We believe that once we come out of this crisis, then we're going to have to be pushing this extra hard to get it on, get it in, get a vote on it this congressional session. In addition to H.R. 40, Senator Cory Booker, for the first time in the U.S. Senate, crafted a Senate companion bill to H.R. 40, and that bill number is S-1083. I think we have 14 co-sponsors. We were trying to move H.R. 40 before we doubled down on the Senate side, but certainly things were, you know, and things still are looking pretty good for H.R. 40. We just have to come from under this government lockdown, and we're poised to we're ready, and we're hopeful.
Now, just to give people some historical context as we conclude, that number of 120 is quite significant because, if I understand correctly, and you, and by you I mean INCOBRA, with this legislative committee, has tracked this more than any other organization. This is more than ever before, right?
Yeah, it's almost 200% more than ever before. So I think the most we've had was about 52, 53. And we had that, you know, we created a lot of momentum with the rewriting of the bill in the last Congress. And we created a lot of momentum going into this new Congress that began January of 2019. We had, for the first time, I think it was 21 original co-sponsors. That's the day the bill was introduced. We had 21 co-sponsors. We never had that amount. And at the time that Sheila Jackson called for the, had the hearing, we had about 50 co-sponsors, 52, 53. Again, that was over just 6 months into the new session. And it took us 2 years to reach that number in the past. And right after the hearing, about 50, 55 more co-sponsors over the next 2 months signed on. And so, you know, it was a tremendous amount of momentum we had going up until the COVID crisis. But, you know, we had 125. We certainly can get it out of the Judiciary Committee. But for the first time, well, we got it out of the subcommittee to the Judiciary Committee. So the first time it would be out of the Judiciary Committee to the House floor. So a lot of precedence at this time is going to happen around H.R. 40.
All right. Well, Cam, would you please give the INCOBRA website again? Because people, not only is it the interactive map, there's also a primer that you've developed that people can get on H.R. 40 that's on the INCOBRA website and other resources. So would you please give the INCOBRA website one more time?
Sure, Dr. Daniels. Thank you. It's incobraonline.org, N-C-O-B-R-A, online.org.
All right. All right, Cam Howard, appreciate you spending some time with us. Obviously, we will continue to be joined at the hip, as Dr. Ivor Carruthers said, because we've been doing this work together for a great period of time, and we're optimistic that, you know, the pandemic is here, but we've been through some of these crises before. We're going to come out on the other side using this as an opportunity to really push forward in a way to make sure that reparations is going to be a reality. So thank you so much for spending time with us on Vantage Point this afternoon.
Thank you, Dr. Daniels.
All right, Cam Howard. Again, that website is incobraonline.org, INCOBRA, N-C-O-B-R-A, incobraonline.org. We'll get you into the INCOBRA website to look to see the interactive map, as well as the primer on H.R. 40 that I talked about. And there's many other resources that you need to see. Again, it was quite interesting to get this information about the cross-generational or intergenerational damage to black DNA as well as to get the information that Dr. Ivor Carruthers provided on the situation of people of African descent and Africans in China. It's now time to go up on the soapbox. The number to call is 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. A series of comments I'd like to make. First of all, I hope you didn't, none of you went for the okey-doke and tried to inject any of that Lysol or Clorox, or I know y'all didn't do that, right? I mean, I could not believe the orange man said that. But I guess anything is possible with this infantile in the White House who feels that he has to have something to say about everything. This is egomaniacal narcissism to a level that is unbelievable. And so therefore we must be about Orange Crush. We must crush the orange man. We must eradicate the orange man syndrome. Must be purged, cleansed. That's what we need. We need to inject ourselves into the political process to purge it of Trump and Trumpism. It's the Orange Crush. The Orange Crush. 212-209-2877. So I'm going to just get that out at the beginning. You also, there's a question now. States are opening up around the country. Governor Cuomo has said maybe northern New York may be open at some point. I guess I want to also get your opinions on this. What do you think should happen now? Are those states like, and we had a caller last week who called and said, look, this is a civil libertarian issue. Don't tell me what to do. I need to, if I want to go swimming, I want to go out and so forth and so on. I don't, this social distancing stuff, I don't want to be told by the state that I need to do that. What's your opinion about that? Is it worth the risk that we see going down in, you know, in states like Georgia and Florida and various other places that seem to be rushing to open up business again? Is that a legitimate concern? I mean, the people are in pain. But there seems to be an inclination to go for business over human life. Or is there a trade-off that can be made? I mean, you know, this herd, this whole concept of herd immunity, so many people may die, but at the end of the day, we save the economy and people can go to work. I've seen people who are desperate to go back to work. So I'm interested in your thoughts about that. And then doubling back on my first comment, how important does the pandemic make voting in November? Is it any more important or less important? Are you interested or concerned about it or not? 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Get you on the soapbox. We're talking about minute, 30 seconds to a minute, 45 a minute. Quick hits. And we want to get as many callers in as possible. We've got open lines. 212-209-2877. Let's go to our first caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. It's your sister, Frederica Bay.
How are you, my sister?
Over the river. I am great. I'm great.
Wonderful.
Thank God. And I love your show with Dr. Carruthers, right?
Yes.
Dr. Carruthers and Dr. Cam Howard.
Right.
Of course, it is not worth it to take money over health. And that absurd thing about injecting Clorox or, you know, disinfectant in us. And you said it just right, Dr. Daniels. Of course, none of us in our halfway right mind would do that. The last thing is really my grandson said, Grandma, it's like God has put the whole earth on timeout. And Mildred Crump was saying the other day, she talked about Armageddon, you know, whatever it is that we think is happening in the whole ethos, God is trying to tell us something. I mean, you know, we are celebrating the Holy Month of Ramadan. Brother was saying yesterday, the Imam, you know, talking about Color Purple in that song, God is watching us right now. We're talking about Bob Marley's Good Over Evil.
Right.
So I enjoy your show. I know you got a lot of folks on. I just wanted to call and say thank you for some sane conversation.
All right. Appreciate it so much. And again, we have to let people know that Sister Frederica Bay is with Women in Support of the Million Man March, one of the great organizations that came out of, that supported and came out of and continues after the Million Man March. 212-209-2877. Got open lines. 212-209-2877. This is the soapbox portion of Vantage Point. And we are really focusing. How could we do anything else that focus on the issue of this this pandemic, this COVID-19 pandemic, its impact disproportionately on black and brown people that we hear being discussed, and the reality of it, and what is it that we do about it, and the idiocy, the madness in the White House. You know, with the this, I mean, who could believe that somebody would? But the problem is, there were people who did believe it. Thousands of people who called into Maryland and Chicago and other, who really believed it. One person actually gargled it, mixed it up with some, and gargled it. That's dangerous. It says to me that that's why. I mean, there are some people who would follow this anywhere. He could, in fact, shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and he would still have followers, as he said. That is dangerous. That's what I'm talking about, the orange crush. We need to crush, I think, the orange man. Maybe that's not enough. Maybe that's not what we need to do. We need to get your opinions about that. How important, therefore, is this election in November? Will it matter at all? Or we just have to just ride this thing through it. And what do you think about this whole issue of New York? What should happen in New York? Are we ready? Is Governor Cuomo taking the appropriate approach? Or should we open it up? In Sweden, they just opened it up. And one wonders, you know, they seem to be, you know, not too concerned about it. There are more people have died than other Scandinavian countries. But maybe this is like overblown. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Let's go to our listening audience again. Good afternoon. You're on the soapbox with the professor.
Mr. Daniel, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Okay. Yeah, I remember I heard you a long time ago. You're filling for for Imhotep, man. That was months ago. Good to hear you again, man.
thank you.
Okay. Yeah, Damn, what I'm about to say is it's multifaceted. I'm trying to compress it. Like what happened in Georgia, right? That's uncalled for. That's uncalled for. That's just surely, like you was talking about, man. You know, people they support, man. They support the man, man. They support him in all the wrong aspects. I mean, nail salons, man. Come on now, and I went on Facebook, and there's a whole lot of people on Facebook, nurses, spilling their guts out. There was one nurse. She was just crying and angry at the same time, saying that it was a slap in the face to open up Georgia non-essential businesses. If I was a governor, you know what I would have been? I would have been like, I'll just make a discretionary because you know, we have the best government in the world. Other countries are not like this. I'm talking to one chick in the Philippines right now. They said they can't go out. And I was going to send her money. And she said they can't go down. They can't go to the city. You know, they need a quarantine pass and all that. We have the best government here. You know? But if I was a governor, I would have been like, it's discretionary, but I have to keep closed non-essential businesses.
Right. All right, my brother.
The same token.
We gotta go now. Gotta go.
Okay. All right.
All right. Gotta make it quick. Let me just say quickly too, and people may want to comment too on, because last week it did come up, the whole question of the Chinese treatment of African people in China. I mean, that was something that came up last week. You may want to talk about that as well. I do want to say that it's interesting, though, in a lot of these places, at least these folks seem to have gotten the message unlike these fools who were doing the demonstrating, who had no mask on, no gloves on, all over top of each other and so forth and so on. And a lot of those businesses, you see them making a conscious effort to do something. Mask. A bowling alley, I saw 32 lanes. They cut it into 16 and half. Restaurants spreading the tables out. I mean, so some of that did percolate. The other thing that's interesting in Georgia, now there were some white mayors too, by the way, who spoke up. So I don't want to just make it that way. But overwhelmingly, the African-American mayors were speaking up stridently, saying, hey, we don't want this lifted. And they understood that's because the vast majority of people who are dying are black people. 212-209-2877 and brown people. 212-209-2877 and people on the Native reservations. I mean, I heard a story about them. Why? They are always last. 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on the soapbox with the professor.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. I love you, Ron.
Well,
I love
you.
Your program.
Well,
I love
you so
the
much.
AI. I'm a long time listener.
Great.
So much to say. But when you first said that the governor, which I'm very proud, thank God we have somebody who's at least talking the talk that we should be hearing. He said that it hasn't been a decline, that it's been a straight line. So that's very important, because that's what we need, is the numbers to go down in order to be safe. And if something is working, why would you want to mess around with it? And the other thing is that all along, this number 45 orange dude, as you say, he's been saying things that are going to imperil and put us at danger. And now he just went off the rails with that, telling us to ingest poison. Even in a diluted form, that would harm our bodies, you know?
Absolutely. Completely off the rail.
And it's even, are we supposed to go drink gasoline too? I mean, people like that want to rush, you have to question, who are those people?
Right.
You know? I believe it's not people like you and I.
That's
even
sure.
Though the poorest are the hardest hit, we're much more wiser.
Right.
You know? We've been down this road in many angles, you know? That our lives are in peril all the time, you know.
Yeah, and one of the things, too, I'm saying is, in line with what Dr. Ivor Carruthers said and also Cam Howard, you know, we are going to take this line down, though. We're going to take these numbers. We know that it is communities of color and poor and working people who are hardest hit. That means that we have to fight on the other side to make sure that this moment will not occur again. We have to change the configuration. We have to see this as a transformative moment and fight like hell to make sure that there are jobs for everybody, this income. This really rereading Martin Luther King in terms of what he was doing at the end of his life in terms of the Poor People's Campaign calling for an economic bill of rights. A lot of people, I am always talking about that. People kind of forget that that's what King was fighting for at the end of his life. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on the soapbox with the professor.
Hello. This is Ray from Brooklyn. And my experience, and take it for what it's worth, ever since before St. Patrick's Day, every evening for 3 or 4 hours, I am out on the sidewalk feeding homeless people, whoever happens to come by.
Yes.
And I've never been afraid of any virus, at least not for a few decades. I'm not afraid of the latest virus because I boost my immune system with large amounts of vitamin C, as much as they're using to cure it in South Korea and China and Singapore and Taiwan and Cuba. For the last more than a month, and every patient who's been put on 24,000 milligrams a day of intravenous vitamin C for 7 days, which is not even a large dose by my standards, none have died. None have progressed to.
Yeah, but you're not purporting to be a scientist, are you?
Pneumonia.
You're not purporting to be a scientist, are you?
I'm an autodidact. I got the highest IQ test score in the history of my junior high school.
Yeah, but that doesn't make you doesn't qualify you really to do that. I mean, I think it's really dangerous for us to sort of anecdotally come forth and ads and put stuff out here. I think people should be free to do whatever they think they want to do. But I think we should be very cautious because people do listen. People do try things. And again, these things have to be scientifically tested. So the idea that you have may have some results, but it really does need to be tested. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate your call. 212-209-2877. The other thing we need to be very concerned about is, yes, feeding the homeless. It's exposing, really, the problem of homelessness all across this country. I saw an article, I think, yesterday. The subways are filthy, they're saying now. Because, you know, the homeless, and I'm just making it as a statement of fact. The people are fleeing into the subways. When they flee into the subways, you know, again, having been all crowded up in many instances, they themselves may be infected. And then there's the whole question of just unsanitary conditions as they do unsanitary things, because we need to be taking better care of homeless people in this society. We should not have a problem of homelessness in the United States of America. So now we're all at risk. It really is that a condition for some of us is a condition for all of us. We cannot escape it. So I have to be concerned about my homeless sisters and brothers. I have to be concerned about those who do not have jobs. We have to be concerned for each other. We have to have a sense of shared values and function from that perspective. 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on the Soapbox with the Professor.
Hi there, this is Elle from Long Island, and I would just like to state, and I hope I can do this briefly, when one has a problem, you have to analyze it, you have to have some idea of how you are going to solve it, you must identify the procedure that you're going to use, and identify what the objective is. What is it you should at least shoot for? Okay? We have been venting and calling names and everything like that, but as people of color, we have to take a stance. If you're in a war, you don't go out and just shoot everybody and shoot all over the place. You have to analyze and strategize.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So knowing what is the goal of this epidemic, those who, and I truly do believe that it has not been a catastrophe by Mother Nature. I believe it has been orchestrated.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What is the goal? Mm. And if you know what the goal is, then you have some idea of how to combat it.
Mm. All right. Well, we appreciate your perspective. It sounds like, you know, some other people are saying the goal is to wipe out black people. Well, that could well be it. It certainly is disproportionately impacting us. But there's a hell of a lot of white people dying, too. So I guess they have to get to a lot of white people to get to the black people's, too. Yeah, I mean, you know, so we need to talk about that. It's poor people across the board, too, are also suffering disproportionately. Black people and brown people and Native Americans and others. There is maybe some conspiratorial element in it. What I do believe is that governor of Georgia, he don't really care because he knows that it's largely black and brown people who will be affected. I do believe that part of it. How we respond is, in fact, to in fact, make sure that this scenario does not happen again, because we're fighting on all levels to create a more egalitarian, a more equal society. 212-209-2877. By the way, in Cobra Online.org. Earlier we had Cam Howard on with the with Encobra, looking at the HR 40 interactive map. You can go there and get that. Also the HR 40 primer. Also this issue, the petition with the African Union to engage them to put more pressure on China to treat people of African descent with some dignity and decency in Africa. AVAAZ. AVAAZ.org. Go online, sign the petition. Good afternoon. You're on the Soapbox with the Professor.
Hi, yes. Good afternoon. My name is Phyllis Key. I'm calling from Nyack, New York.
And, you know, while sitting and listening, I definitely agree with the sister that just spoke and what was stated. One of the major things that we need to do is understand what happened to the United States when the Act of 1871 occurred. To really, really research that, because, A, everyone continues to call this place a country, but it was turned into a corporation, and that's how it's functioning. So the Act of 1871, getting back to the original Constitution, because everything is functioning outside of the original Constitution.
And so the consequences of that is what? Therefore,
everything we're experiencing today.
Right,
for the most part.
So the notion of the, you're talking about the notion of corporations as persons?
Well, if we go research the Act of 1871.
But tell us what it is. What is it? What is it? Cut it
the Act of 1871 was when the 41st Congress, as far as I'm concerned, committed
what does treason. What did it achieve? Does it say that corporations are persons?
Well, that came after a while. It just came, it turned country. We don't have a country. The United States is a corporation, and most people aren't aware that it's now a corporation and it's going to function like a corporation, where corporations and businesses and everything goes above human life.
All right, okay. Appreciate that perspective, but I'm sure these people who have been at this for a long time, there's a hell of a lot of business people out here who don't know that as well and who really don't care about that, because there's a whole value system going all the way back to Adam Smith in that same era. That talks about this. Last caller, you're on the soapbox with the professor.
Hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. You got 1 minute.
Okay. Yeah. Well, my name is Bernard from the Bronx, and I just want to comment on what you're saying about the mistreatment of Africans in China. And it's one of the things I've noticed in my area, that some Chinese restaurants are opening up and everybody's floodgating them, and they double in the prices to make back what they lost, and at the same time, nobody knows if they properly store the food that has already been in there or new shipments have come in. And I feel this is going on.
Wait. Let me just stop you right there, because then what happens? This is the danger. See, we don't. I mean, first of all, we have no evidence about anything about food transmitting anything. Let's get that out of the way. The other thing is the people that local. We have lots of people. There's some people right here in my neighborhood. They ain't Chinese who are also trying to. There's greed out here, and a lot of people take advantage of greed, irrespective of race, ethnicity, or culture. So let's get that out of the way. We do not want to blame the local Chinese population for what the Chinese people, what the government of China is doing. And I've seen some of that. Well, now we're going to go out and, you know, we're going to be, you know, that may not be what you meant, but I want to get that straight and clarified right off the bat. Okay, well, that's the end of our show, Ashley. We've run out of time. We're on the soapbox. Next week starts our pledge drive. And, of course, it is the first Monday of the week and of the month. We also have Mayor Roz J. Barak on the first of every month. So we'll have our State of Newark report. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniel, saying we appreciate you listening in to WBAI 99.5 FM. The show is Vantage Point, and we'll see you again here next week.